And hello, West Heights. I'm really excited to be here today. This is my first time at 82, and I can feel the energy in the room, which is really special. I won't take that for granted again. So hello to West Heights at home. Normally, I am moderating the chat, opening the chat and moderating that, and hosting the virtual foyer. So those are my peeps out there. So hello this morning. So we are working through some stories this summer. Real People in God's Story. And I'm noticing actually that there's a little bit of a summer theme. Did you notice that? I didn't intend to join in on the theme, but I love it when that happens. I actually committed to speaking about this story when I was prepping for a Zoom call with our kids late in the spring. And I realized that I know this story, but I don't really know this story. And so I was fascinated by that. It's a fascinating story about peacemaking. And I'm not sure you can really talk too much about peacemaking, so I'm going to go for it. Because being a Jesus follower is all about being a peacemaker. And we talked about earlier in the summer, Naaman. Do you remember that? We talked about Naaman and how his servant girl was a peacemaker, reaching out to her enemy, who was her owner, really. Jonah, we talked about Jonah. He did not love his enemies, but God taught him that God is a lot more about reconciliation than he is about punishment. And then last week, Pastor Bill talked about restoration, I believe it was, and just bringing our relationships together and restoring relationships. So today we are working out of 1 Samuel 25. So, and the story today is about Abigail. And it's quite an intriguing story. And when we realize what Abigail was doing to make peace out of a violent conflict, we can look at our own conflicts, the conflicts in our lives, and even though they may be very different, we can try to get some important things right by looking at what she did. So the story, the backstory is that David, he's a young man. He's the youngest brother in a large family. And he is brought into the fields. Do you remember? Brought in from the fields. Do you remember this? From tending his father's sheep. And he comes before Samuel. This is the prophet Samuel. This is a judge over all of Israel. And Samuel takes David on this incredible journey towards kingship. Because God has chosen David to be the next king. So at the top of 1 Samuel chapter 25, where the story begins, it says, "Now Samuel died." And this is significant. Samuel is the prophet of God who anointed David and set David on this path. And you know what? It has been a rocky road for David. David first becomes a favorite of the current king, who's King Saul. He's part of the king's household. He's a personal servant to the king. After he slays the giant Goliath, he leads the armies of Israel to victory and victory and victory. And he becomes best friends with the king's son. And the king's daughter is, in fact, in love with him. So it sounds like a fairy tale. But all the while, King Saul is becoming jealous. And he tries to kill David on multiple occasions. And the king's own son and his own daughter are the ones who helped David to get away. Now David is a fugitive. And he's living in the wilderness, and he's running from an army that is intent on finding him and killing him. And he leads this group of ragtag, discontent, distressed runaways, and they are now his men. So, David lives under a great deal of stress. He is living in the wilderness. He is mourning his mentor, Samuel. And he finds himself in a position where he may be able to do some good. So, He basically runs a kind of protection racket. There is this wealthy and influential man, Nabal, who owns not only property, but thousands of sheep and thousands of goats, which, of course, at that time, were constantly vulnerable to attack, to theft. And Nabal and his men, first of all, they don't take anything from Nabal. They're out in the wilderness. They really could have taken anything that they wanted. But David even goes farther, and he protects them so that these shepherds and these sheep live in a kind of safety, an unexpected safety. Although David's role was not unheard of at that time, there were groups like David's who would protect households, who would protect villages even, and then if those villages were raided, their protectors would go after the raiders and restore the household's possessions. So David, it seems like he hasn't been asked to do this, but he's been playing that role, and he is just asking for a donation now. It's time for feasting. He's politely asking, can he have a little bit of the share? In verses 4-9, it says, "When David heard that Nabal was shearing his sheep, he sent 10 of his young men to Carmel with this message for Nabal. Peace and prosperity to you, your family, and everything you own. I am told that it is sheep shearing time. While your shepherds stayed among us near Carmel, we never harmed them, and nothing was ever stolen from them. Ask your own men. They will tell you this is true. So would you be kind to us, since we've come at a time of celebration? Please share any provisions you might have on hand with us and with your friend David." David's young men gave this message to Nabal in David's name, and they waited for a reply. So David is hoping that he's been fostering a good relationship with this powerful person, and that maybe there will be some reciprocation, some goodwill. But no, Nabal, he's not that kind of man. And he says, "Who is this fellow, David? Who does this son of Jesse think he is? There are lots of servants these days who run away from their masters. Should I take my bread and my water and my meat that I've slaughtered for my shears and give it to a band of outlaws who comes from who knows where?" Now, granted, David is an outlaw, but that is another insult in his life. He has not done anything to warrant having to be on the run. It's just really that the king is jealous of him. And to David's credit, what Nabal did was really evil. It was believed at that time to be a sacred duty to receive and to feed and to lodge travelers and strangers. And hospitality is rooted in that culture. Hospitality is actually rooted in their faith and in Scripture. "I am the Lord your God. The stranger who dwells among you shall be to you as one born among you, and you shall love him as yourself." So in the time of Nabal, any lack of civility or kindness would have been more than rude, all right? It was insulting. So David is, in fact, insulted. And when his men tell him what Nabal has said, his reply is quick and it's furious. "Strap on your swords." And he takes 400 men to go and teach Nabal a lesson. Back then, I thought it was interesting that, you know, wrapping your sword or your belt around you to strap on your sword, that was a battle gesture in ancient Israel. And so David is really saying, "Nabal has repaid me evil for good, and this means war." And he pretty much swears to kill every male in Nabal's household. Wow. What a world they live in. It was a violent time, and it was a culture of violence. Evil for evil was part of the code. Enter Abigail. The text says that Abigail is sensible and beautiful. Our first indication that this is true is that Nabal's servant goes to her as if he knows that she is their best hope. She's a woman who's wise. She has good judgment. She knows what her husband knows. Her husband is a Calebite. He's of the tribe of Judah. There's no way that he doesn't know who David is. He knows who David is, and so does she. They know what he's done for Israel. They know that he's a mighty warrior, and that if he survives, he will most likely be the king. So she's Hebrew, like her husband, we think, and like David, and she knows of the Hebrew God. She would know of God's unusual nature. The unusual nature of the Hebrew God was that compared to the gods of the surrounding people, groups, he is a God who wants to fight on behalf of his people. And he has a penchant for offering them alternatives to war. She does know that David is satisfying his anger right now, but she